There's been a lot of talk about how do you make this sustainable? And there's not one answer, but one piece that is core to that is really galvanizing and cementing around this notion that arts and culture is already right here, and we need to lean into it and value it and hold it up and uplift it. And in that way, it won't be able to be ignored.
Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers working on solutions facing our fellow community members, nonprofits, small businesses, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This episode is part of our special series on how the arts and culture sector is coming back from the COVID-19 pandemic and features voices from the co-production of Arts for a Better Bay Area State of the Arts Summit held at the Strand Theater in San Francisco on June 28, 2023. The focus of the summit was on rebuilding our communities through the arts.
I want to welcome you to the breakout Regional Economic Recovery Through the Arts. And just to introduce myself again, I am Susie McKinnon with Arts for a Better Bay Area, and I'll be facilitating this panel. I'm going to start with a brief synopsis of this topic, and then I will introduce all of our panelists here, and then we're going to allow them all about 5 minutes to speak about all the programs that they're working on that are related to this topic, and then we'll open it up to Q&A. So essentially, this breakout works to shed light on how arts and culture can make a positive economic impact on cities and neighborhoods, and also investigate the role arts and culture can play in regional recovery. What we've witnessed, especially here in San Francisco, is that there are a number of initiatives and programs underway or being developed. Mostly what I see is in public and private partnerships to utilize the arts towards helping to revitalize and reinvigorate various regions and areas throughout the city. And I will say that some areas in San Francisco definitely look to be more impacted than others, especially the downtown area and where we are now in the mid-market and central market area. Each one of our panelists here today is directly working on or involved in some of these initiatives. And we also want to disclose that the panel here is not representative of the full list of all the initiatives that are happening here in San Francisco, but we hope this panel will help to shed more light on the specific topic and also some of the programs that are happening here right now and coming up. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with introducing everyone. Right here to my left is Laura Papiti with the Center for Cultural Innovation. And then next we have Richard Raya. He's with the MEDA, Mission Economic Development Agency. And we have Fernando Pujas. He's with the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation. Next is Meredith Winner. She's with Building 180 and also Painting the Void. And then we have Jacob Bitliff, who just stood in for his colleague who has COVID, so we're thankful he's here, but he's with the San Francisco Office of Economic and Workforce Development. So we didn't have a sequence of how we wanted to run through this, so I thought we'd maybe kind of popcorn it, and does any of you want to take it away?
We'll call it home turf since we're here in mid-market, I suppose.
Yeah,
thank you, Susie.
Perfect.
Hi, everyone. Again, Fernando Pujals with the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation. I want to just start by saying I'm delighted to be having this conversation here in mid-market or in the central city neighborhoods. Certainly, there is a lot of challenges and throughout the city and particularly in the downtown core. But, you know, it's my strong belief that the international reputation of the city comes right here through the central city neighborhoods. And I have been involved in a process over the last year engaging with stakeholders, including developers, brokers, arts organizations, artists, individuals, small businesses, really looking at the neighborhood to think about what's next. And the answer that keeps coming back to us is something that's been staring us right in the face the whole time. And that is that within three blocks here from 6th to 9th, we have five major entertainment venues between Bill Graham, Warfield, Orpheum, Golden Gate, and The Strand, as well as longstanding independent arts organizations, everything from Hollis Hospitality House's community arts program to Counterpulse. Rest in peace, Piano Fight. My colleague now, Rob Reddy, is in the audience. We'll talk a little bit about that. But that is to say that we have the infrastructure for what could be recognized as a top-notch international arts district right here in front of us. And we have not, as a city, as a region, really leaned in and capitalized on that potential. And what we have right now is, you know, not to stress on the doom loop that Maria so eloquently reversed for us, we have nothing but opportunity. Mid-market is sitting with over 40% vacancy. and climbing. And so what we have done is put out a call for creative concepts. Many of you in the audience maybe have applied. And what we see is that in the vacuum out of COVID and the fentanyl crisis that delivers for us the very real experience of tragedy upon tragedy that was going on at the corner when many of us arrived, is the creative community raising their hand and saying, despite experience of generations of being tapped to lead economic recovery and then pushed out, we're here again to hold a mirror to the current situation and express back the truth of our reality. And so out of that creative concept, we've seen 50 individuals and organizations raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm willing to be a tenant in a space for up to a year and bring creativity and my art practice to mid-market to help lead a change of both the perception and the experience that's happening on the sidewalk and create a kind of connectivity between these major venues that bring internationally recognized acts right here to our city that is a leader in culture for decades upon decades. And so coming Friday, we're going to be reaching back out to 15 of the organizations that have submitted to engage them in a stipend process to develop their concepts into further proposals. We will be launching with at least 3 tenancies and vacant spaces, and then hopefully bridging out to about 7 or 8. And what we've landed on is that in all of those proposals, certain themes come up of different types of practice, whether it's literary arts or a blend of tech and art or fashion and textile work, and creating creative hubs where we will house more than one organization per place to begin to develop a different type of ecosystem in a saturated, concentrated way centered around a couple blocks of 6th and Market. And so we hope you'll follow along with that journey. In addition to that, we also have received close to 40 other concepts that are not quite tenancies, but either public art or programming, and we'll be looking to layer that as well. And then we'll look at our local business community and partners that are leading other initiatives, which some of which we've heard of and we'll hear more of, to layer in other experiential pieces like food and beverage or things that might be missing in the concepts now, more music. So I can go on and on, but that's the gist of an effort that we're trying to lead. There's been a lot of talk about how do you make this sustainable? And there's not one answer, but one piece that is core to that is really galvanizing and cementing around this notion that arts and culture is already right here, and we need to lean into it and value it and hold it up and uplift it. And in that way, it won't be able to be ignored. So thanks for the opportunity and looking forward to the conversation tonight.
Hi, everyone. I'm Meredith Winner, and I am the COO and co-founder of Building 180, which is a public art production and curation agency. We work globally and also a lot in San Francisco. We are originally based here. I'm still a resident here as well. I also am the co-founder and managing director of Paint the Void, which is a nonprofit organization fiscally sponsored by Intersection for the Arts to paint murals in the Bay Area. And that project started from the wake of COVID in the very early days of the lockdown. We decided to put this organization together to uphold one of our main values, which is to help artists maintain sustainable careers. In both organizations, that's one of the pinpoints, is that we pay artists well. We really value their work. We trust them to do the best job, and we find opportunities through that. And we help connect artists to these opportunities via in the for-profit, which is Building 180, or the nonprofit, which is Paint the Void. I've been working with many of you in the audience, including the OEWD, also Ben Davis, who's here with Illuminate. We did the murals in JFK as a community gathering point. We've done over 250 murals in the Bay on boarded storefronts. And part of that initiative too is that when COVID was hitting, people didn't even know that businesses were open. And art is one way for art, for people to get out of their homes and actually see what's happening in their community. It helped uplift people's spirits. It also showed that businesses are still thriving, even if it wasn't very apparent. And in everything that we do, a lot of the work that is public sculptures and murals are a way to get people out of their homes and to drive economic activity and to support local businesses. So we've been really successful in not having to do too much grant funding with Paint the Void. We, of course, have worked with OEWD, the mayor's office, the tourism board. But typically, we are trying not to apply for grant funding ourselves. It's a very long process. I'm a team of only 3 people, and we just really are engrossed in our artist community. We're artists first. And I think that really shows in the work that we do and the people that we support. I think that last year we, with Building 180, did over 137 individual projects. And with Paint the Void, now we're currently starting another project with the Civic Joy Fund to paint another 100 murals that was starting to kick off now. And we're also working with the SF New Deal on consulting for how to get the best people in their vacant spaces.
Okay. Thank you. Richard, do you want to take it away?
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Richard Raya. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at the Mission Economic Development Agency. We're based in the Mission. We serve about 10,000 residents a year in the Mission. We focus on the Latino immigrant community, and we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. And we started off by helping residents start small businesses, help entrepreneurs get off the ground, helping families do their taxes. But about 10 years ago, as we were seeing our population displaced, the working class immigrant population, the artists being displaced for the past 20 years, beginning with the dot-com boom, we lost about 10,000 Latino residents to displacement. So seeing that, we knew that we had to do something more than just provide services to folks. So we actually ventured into the affordable housing world, the world of commercial real estate. And we did that by joining with our community and organizing and advocating. A big thing that we did is we flooded City Hall about 8 or 9 years ago, along with many other organizations and many residents, just letting the powers that be know that there's a tremendous displacement crisis in our community. As a result of that type of advocacy, then and ongoing advocacy, the city created new funding opportunity for affordable housing, opportunities for affordable housing, as well as new policies to support that, to align with that funding. So as a result of that, our organization has since then bought 38 apartment buildings and prevented the residents from being evicted. And we've also built 6 large sites, so 10-story buildings with 100% affordable housing. So one of the first persons in our small, what we call the small sites, the apartment buildings, one of the first persons that we saved from eviction was an artist, Yolanda Lopez, a longtime Mission District resident and just a leader in the Chicano civil rights movement, which was the Mexican American civil rights movement. And so she was able to stay in place, stay in the neighborhood as a result of us buying these apartment buildings. But another artist that was helped through this process and who was saved from eviction is Ani Rivera, who the executive director of Galeria de la Raza. So that's just an example of the type of folks that are kind of who we help to prevent being evicted. But there's more to the work than that. With our large sites, our large buildings, and actually on our small sites too, we put murals on all these buildings working with local artists, but we also reserve the ground floor retail space for artists, for art galleries, and for nonprofits in general in the neighborhood that have been serving the neighborhood for a long time. So one of those organizations that got placed in our ground floor retail is Galeria de la Raza. And so I want to talk about the murals, though, because this might be one of the most impactful parts of what we do. So we work with local artists. We work with the community to select the local artists as well as to select what the topic of the art on the walls. And one of our buildings, our most recent building, 2060 Folsom, it's 127 units of affordable housing. But on that wall is a 9-story mural of the artist Yolanda Lopez and examples of her work as well. And examples of her work, including kind of showing how the Chicano movement interacted with the Black Power movement and the American Indian movement, and how a lot of this work was taking place in the Mission District and a lot of this alliance building, and that how that's just part of the legacy of that community. And I think what's really powerful about that 9-story mural of Yolanda Lopez's face and her artwork is that when you enter the Mission District from downtown, you see that you're entering a community with a legacy of art, of organizing, of making change. And I love that. And you may not know, but Yolanda Lopez passed away about 1.5, 2 years ago, right before the building was finished. And in part, that's why the community chose to have her on the building. I think what I want to say last is that this work, I don't want to go deep on how this is part of just a comprehensive community development initiative that we're part of. We also work with the schools. We also work with small businesses to make sure that they can also afford to stay in the Mission District. But I think what we're seeing is that when the community comes together and organizes and advocates and makes noise and has a plan, we can change systems. And we've seen that happen in the Mission District. That work that I just talked about is actually now a national model. We're hosting folks from all over the country. And so there is something that is working. And there are folks on this panel and folks on earlier panels that are also talking about kind of similar success stories. So it's good for us all to be here together. It's a much needed coming together of voices because we can make change. So thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Papadi. I'm the program director at Center for Cultural Innovation. And if you don't know about us, you should. We're cciarts.org, and we exist for you, our artists and arts and culture workers. We're headquartered in LA, but we have an office in San Francisco at Intersection for the Arts. We're a statewide organization. We're a re-granter. So what that means is we apply for funds from foundations, government agencies, and then we re-grant them into the community. And we're unique in the landscape of re-granters because our focus is on individuals. So if you're part of an organization, then you're probably, especially a nonprofit, you're accustomed to probably applying for foundation grants, government grants. Well, a lot of those opportunities don't exist for individuals. So our role is to ensure that resources flow to individuals as opposed to organizations. You know, no shade on organizations, but we love individuals. They're the backbones of our economic initiatives and of our organizations. And yeah, we focus on the economic security of individuals. And the way we do this is through our grant programs. We have regional and statewide opportunities. Some are annual, some are ongoing. I want to lift up in particular our Quick Grant program, which is for professional development support. It's amazing. It's coming upon its 15th anniversary, and it supports individuals in the arts to build their business skills and enhance their administrative capacity, because we really believe that that will help with ensuring that you have financial resilience. You're not just sustaining, but you're being more resilient to times when things are, well, unanticipated. We also offer business workshops and training, and we really believe that you don't have to be formally classified or incorporated, because as an individual, your artistic practice is your business, right? You are a sole proprietorship, and you need to treat your practice as a business as well as a creative practice. So we're very invested in equipping folks with just foundational skills to help map out and plan strategies for their arts-based business. And then lastly, we offer research and advocacy work. And we've always been a commissioner of primary research, but we really amplified those efforts, especially in 2021. We released a report about arts workers in California. And from that, it galvanized our recently, well, publicly debuted Soul Center for Liberated Work, which is working on strengthening worker and social safety net protections for independent workers. Because we really believe that we're no longer a system that just relies on an employer and employee-based benefit system, right? A lot of us are freelancers and independent workers, and benefits should flow to those individuals as well. So if you go to our website, oh my God, we have so much going on. So I think I'm just here mostly just to promote the many things that we do. And I hope you will tap into some of our resources. And thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Last but not least, we have Jacob.
All right. Thank you so much. Jacob Bentliff with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development with the city. And first, I just want to start off by really thanking everyone who's here and for having us. You know, I was with the city all through the COVID pandemic. And so for, you know, everyone who is in the arts out there and who stuck around and is still here and is not going anywhere and is doing your work, just thank you for still being here, because it was not easy. And as you all know, I don't need to tell you. I just want to share a little bit about how the city is looking at the overall task that we face coming out of the pandemic in terms of economic recovery and the role of the arts within that. You know, as you all know, a lot has been written about our travails here in San Francisco, but, you know, many of the economic fundamentals really are there. So the problem that we're not having is an issue with jobs and overall economic growth. Our unemployment rate is extremely low, near record lows at 2.7%. We actually have more jobs than we did before the pandemic. The Bay Area, if you look at GDP, was actually the fastest growing region in 2022 in the country. So, you know, our issue is not a lack of talent or a lack of money. It's really that people just aren't coming downtown like they used to, and people aren't coming to San Francisco from around the region in the same way that they used to. You know, our office attendance is at around 45%. It's been holding steady there for a while. And, you know, I will say a bright spot, though, is in tourism. Actually, we're at about 80% for domestic visits right now. And as of last month, we had 90% for international visits. So, you know, people still want to come to San Francisco, and they are. And more of them will be coming. coming. You know, a lot of Asian travel has reopened after restrictions in China and Japan have been lifted recently. So we have a lot of reason to see people coming into the city. So, but it's not going to be because you have to for work 5 days a week. And that is just a fundamental change in the reality for downtown. And downtown is the core of our economy. It is our economic engine in San Francisco. So where does that, how does the arts play into that? We have to come up with new ways. We have to make sure people know why there are other reasons to come downtown. You need to come to San Francisco from elsewhere. You need to come downtown from elsewhere in the city because you want to, because there's something cool that you can get here that you can't get at home or wherever you're coming into the city from. And the arts is just one of those things. You know, sure, you can experience the arts if you like, but there's so much more that you get, as you all know, from being there in person. And it's also one of those industries or fields where coming together and being physically present with other people who are either inspiring you or doing the work with you is just so critical. So that's something San Francisco has to offer, whether people are, you know, taking their meetings for work from Zoom or not. So in February, the mayor rolled out a roadmap to the future of downtown San Francisco, and it had 9 strategies that range everything, you know, you can imagine, making sure that we are responding to people that are experiencing homelessness and making sure we're providing the services that people need to be healthy and to thrive, making sure that we have transit in this city to keep us getting where we need to go, to housing, to making sure our public spaces are serving everyone that they need to serve and being a reason to come downtown. And one of those strategies is the arts. And the reason for that is, as I say, that is clearly a reason. It's one area that we can really elevate that San Francisco has. We have the cultural history. We have our natural beauty. We have our architectural beauty. We have our artistic beauty. We have the people come to San Francisco thinking about creativity. And that's something that we can elevate. And it's something that we have that other places don't have in the same way. So some of the initiatives that we're working on specifically within that is a whole set of, you know, grants programs to really have activations, to have events, to make sure that people do have a reason to come downtown. We have the Vacant to Vibrant program that was mentioned in filling storefronts. We have partnerships with the Yerba Buena Community Benefits District to have a monthly art and makers market in Yerba Buena Gardens. We are partnering with Cultivate Labs and SOMA to bring artists and pop-ups into spaces that especially feature the AAPI community in SOMA and in downtown. We are partnering with Litquake to, you know, to help them come back and thrive from the pandemic as well. We funded actually a little bit for ACT, who I want to thank as our host tonight as well, you know, helping them offer low price and free tickets to folks for their Wizard of Oz run, which brought 2,000 people into the theater actually at free cost or very low cost. And so, you know, it's all those things to bring people downtown and into the city for the arts. It's also getting a lot of ourselves out of the way. You know, we're really good. We were talking about bureaucracy in the arts. Well, let me tell you, we have a lot of bureaucracy in City Hall too, getting out of the way when it comes to especially to events, especially to activations and things going on within spaces like this. It can be very complicated actually to pull something like this off, and we get in the way a lot. So getting rid of a lot of the red tape is there. Also, we're working on an initiative that we call the Arts, Culture, and Entertainment Zone, which will likely be mini zones, actually. And that is an initiative that's all about looking around at where we have the concentrations that we already have in the arts and building a strategy around that to really elevate those parts of the city where we have the bones and helping to fill that in. So, you know, that could be making sure the zoning and regulations are there to make it easy to do what you need to do and be flexible. You know, artists don't want to have to know whether I'm a nightlife use or a gallery use. You just want to do what you need to do. It could be fee relief and tax relief. It could be some more grant programs along the lines of what I've mentioned. It could be, you know, also marketing and helping to kind of do placemaking and make sure that people know what an area like right here in Mid-Market has to offer, both people in San Francisco who may have forgotten or people from around the world as well. So those are some of the things that we're doing. And again, I just want to thank everyone on the panel and here tonight for doing the work that you do. And we need you. So thank you.
Thank you, Jacob.
Okay, everybody, we're running really late. We have time for one question.
And this makes us realize we need to do a day-long event. So we can have more discussion.
And we're going to bring this back next year. Obviously, you can see we could make it an all-day event, and that's kind of what we'll be working on. So we have time for one question, but I also invite you all to our non-hosted bar. There's music, there's food. Take all the questions and all of your energy out and talk to our panelists. So who's got one question and not a dissertation? Here we go.
Okay, I'm Brenda Berlin. I am a longtime arts person here in the city since the 60s. I founded the Julian Theater with my ex-husband and now deceased Richard Reinexis, founder of the cultural centers and all kinds of other things, which we can talk about at some other time. So what I want to do is talk to you about what specifically, besides what you're talking about for the arts in mid-market and downtown, how are the housing, what's going on with the housing conversions with the empty spaces in the high-rises? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I could touch on that a little bit. Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, we don't expect the same amount of office demand to be there anytime soon. So we got a lot of buildings. It's actually, you look at that as an asset we have in San Francisco. It's a lot of infrastructure that we've built over the years. And how do we make use of that space for the things that people need to do and want to do now? So in terms of converting to housing specifically, actually, we just passed some legislation yesterday that the mayor and President Peskin on the board introduced to just go through the planning code, go through the building code, get everything out of the way that needed to be done to make it really as easy as we can to do those conversion projects. You know, we have a lot of really beautiful older buildings in San Francisco and all through this area as well that were designed at a time before air conditioning. They have natural ventilation. They have good light. So they can lend themselves to that kind of conversion. You know, the issue really is primarily economic at this point. And, you know, Richard can tell you about that as well. You know, building any kind of housing or any kind of anything right now is very challenging, interest rates and so on. But, you know, what we've done so far of the city is make sure that we've gotten ourselves out of the way and that we've really rolled out the red carpet for doing that. We've put out a request for interest just last week as well to invite anyone that might be a property owner or a developer or have a concept to come forward and tell us what they need. What else is there that we could help to do to make those conversions happen? And I just want to say also, that doesn't have to be just for housing. That could be for event space. It could be for art space. I mean, you tell us. You know, we need our buildings can serve us by being a place not just for people to live, so they're here and they're part of the community and it's not just about office workers, but they can also be places that bring people to the downtown area from other places as well. So thank you for the question.
Thank you. Are there any other responses to that question?
The very same question was asked in a previous panel, and Josh Simon from CAST, I thought he had a really useful answer. He said, it's doable. The conversion is doable. Money is needed. But if the community can come together and organize and advocate, then we can make it happen. And so I agree with him because that's what allowed us to do what we're doing in the Mission District is we had to go to City Hall. We had to advocate. Our elected leaders put a bond, a housing bond on the ballot that passed. And that's the money that we use to buy apartment buildings and preserve their affordability. So it's kind of a smaller scale example, but I just want to put that out there. I don't know how we would pay for it, but I know it would cost a lot of money and it would take advocacy, I think, to make that happen.
Can I say something? I think if you really want the community to advocate, I think you also have to provide some channels and encourage their participation as well, because artists need space and need affordable housing. So the need is definitely there, but people are also, you know, they have their practice to take care of, probably other jobs potentially. So it's there. Give them a vehicle.
So I, again, want to thank all of our wonderful panelists for being here today, and thank you all for joining us. We're doing this again, and we would love to get your feedback and learn how we could make this even better next year. Please join us in the lobby for refreshments and networking. Thank you.
You're listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant for the Zellerbach Family Foundation, whose arts and culture grants ensure vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and artists and audiences inclusive of the Bay Area's diverse communities and cultures have opportunities to thrive. To find out more, go to zff.org. And by a grant from the Peaceful World Foundation, dedicated to fostering a culture of global peace through the promotion of hosted conversations and education. You can learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Because of the time constraints for our usage of the Strand Theater, our panel discussion ran short. In the second part of this episode, we reached out to two of the panelists to catch up with each of them on their ongoing work to utilize the arts for economic and community development. Our first guest is the co-founder and COO of Building 180 and the managing director and co-founder of Paint the Void, Meredith Winner. I'm joined remotely by the co-founder and COO of Building 180 and the managing director and co-founder of Paint the Void, Meredith Winner. Meredith, welcome back to Voices of the Community.
Thanks.
So I want to thank you again for participating in the Arts for a Better Bay Area, you know, State of the Arts Summit back on June 28th at the Strand Theater. As folks have been listening to the first part of this interview, they'll notice that we had some technical difficulties during your portion of the panel discussion. And we really wanted to bring you back to the show and just provide a little update on all of your work with both Building 180 and Paint the Void since, you know, early summer in June, since we're now recording this in the November time period. So with that said, please share with us what you've been, you know, doing and how you, you know, work on, well, let's start with Reinvent Downtown, because that's a big issue. It was also a big topic of our APA Summit as well, the Doom Loop and Maria's Joy Loop counter programming. So take it away.
Thanks so much. I have been up to a lot. I can't believe that the summit was that long ago. It seems like the second half of the year has flown by, but it's not a straight line. We have been really busy. A lot of our work has been mural-focused work in the Bay Area. We have been painting utility box murals across different neighborhoods in San Francisco. We're almost finished doing 100 utility box murals, which are small little murals, but they also really help with civic pride engagement and also helping people to take care of their neighborhoods a bit better. This is through the Civic Space Foundation, who funded the program, and we've been facilitating it through Paint the Void. We're working with 27 artists on that project, and I think most of them should be wrapped up by the end of this month.
Nice. And I think, you know, going back to the whole reinvention of downtown and the Vacant to Vibrant piece, you know, part of the theme of the whole ABBA Arts for a Better Bay Area Summit was really talking about how now arts are being viewed, no surprise, as economic and community redevelopment. So, you know, you had mentioned that you consulted with the Vacant to Vibrant folks. Can you share with us a little bit about what you consulted with them and the idea of working, you know, with artists and bringing artists? Because, you know, now all of a sudden, oh, we have vacant storefronts. Let's bring in artists. It'll be magical, right? In the meantime, you know, they make it a great neighborhood, and then they get priced out, and, you know, it was really fun.
Right. Hopefully not, and hopefully some of those leases will be extended. The program did launch, and it was very fun to see so many people downtown and engaging in these new spaces, be it hopefully not too temporarily, but hopefully we'll get a little bit more longevity out of the program. But we, as consultants, were really helping with the intake forms, or really the intake application for small business owners and for artists. We have hosted some artist residencies in the past, which helped guide our questionnaires to really think about what kind of questions you want to ask in order to really pre-screen people to see that they would be capable of working in that space or to make sure that they're a right fit. We also developed a application rubric for the other stakeholders that were actually weighing in on the applications that they were reading. So different types of scoring systems to streamline the acceptance process, because with the program, there were over, I want to say close to 800 applications, which is quite a lot to read through and really find the best fit for a limited amount of spaces. Beyond that, we, for the people that were selected, we were offering technical assistance support for the artist portion.
So Paint the Void was, you know, kind of birthed, if you will, during COVID, and you were, you know, doing these amazing, you know, pieces of art on, you know, boarded up buildings, if you will. Sadly, there's still a lot of boarded up buildings here in San Francisco. What are some of the things that you've seen come out of it for, I think, both the arts artist and artist workforce, as well as the community at large?
Sure. It's actually a good timing, because we're in the process of publishing or self-publishing a Paint the Void retrospective book. So it's very top of mind for me these days. And it's been really amazing to read past input from artists that we worked with that say that a lot of the work that we have helped facilitate with them has really jump-started their career, so that they have been able to go on and do bigger projects and actually maintain careers as living and working artists, which I think is an amazing outcome. I think that a lot of the difficulty in making public art often comes down to permitting processes and where you actually can place artwork. And even with funding, that can be quite difficult. So kind of navigating through different stakeholders and different entities that have some sort of say in the process is really important to make those personal connections with people so that they know who you are when things are coming across their desk. You have to get really good at doing budget tracking, which is a big thing that we provide for artists that are working on large scale projects, particularly with sculptural artists, that it's a lot of materials to track and crew and transportation and things of that nature. I'm trying to think of other lessons that I've learned. I think really being open-minded and also really trusting artists is a really big important factor because artists know what they're doing, at least when it comes to making the artwork. That's why people hire them and allowing them to have the most creative freedom as possible really usually allows the project to be as best as it can be or as good as it can be.
And then going to everyone's favorite topic when it comes to creating art is funding. So in your work over the years, what would you say are some of the things that you and Shannon have found as far as, you know, funding models, right? There's the foundational funding, if you will, through, you know, philanthropy. There's government funding. There's, you know, real estate developers who, like, you know, are either required to do public art or want to do some form of public art. What are some of the things that you guys have found that has actually worked that you could also make as recommendations?
I think that just making sure that you're being diversified is really important because all of our projects come from very different sources. So again, like you said, we have funding through the government, which has come from OEWD, but oftentimes from them, and then creating those relationships. With Paint the Void, we had started a fiscal sponsorship project so that we could actually fundraise for those mural works. We work again with developers, and Rec and Park sometimes has funding as well, and really just kind of keeping an eye out on who is working in the field and projects that you kind of want to go after. With Building 180, most of the time things are really projects are coming to us as opposed to us like thinking of the project ourselves and then manifesting it. Whereas Paint the Void was an idea of ours that we made happen through connecting with people in the community and finding funding sources. And I think it's really just like finding a place in an idea that you really do like as an artist to do those types of works. Because then I think from an artist standpoint too, is that they will be making work that they really want to be working as opposed to something that's really prescribed. The other way around, you know, working through, you know, agencies for lack of a better term for us, because we wear a lot of different hats, is that we really do try to protect an artist's best interest and also make sure that they are getting the creative freedom that they deserve and making sure that the projects are aligned with their type and style of work. So it kind of goes in both directions a lot of the time of either figuring out an idea and figuring out how to execute that idea or having someone who has funding already coming to you that wants art but doesn't necessarily know like what that means. And also for artists is reaching out to people who are in the position of doing curation and production work, like entities like Building 180 and or Paint the Void, who get in an influx of projects and making your art known to those types of organizations.
Thank you. And since we are coming into the holiday season, everyone, of course, turns to art and light and entertainment and all of that. Are there projects that you and the team are working at Building 180 or Paint the Void for the end of the year and or projects going into 2024 that you'd like to share?
We have a lot of upcoming projects. Going into the holidays is it's a nice reprieve because a lot of the times our projects are wrapping up or close to wrapped up so that everybody from the client side and artists can really take a little breather. We are working with the city of Napa on their Lighted Arts Festival, bringing a few installations there. We're also bringing some permanent installations in the city of Indio. We just wrapped up some projects in the Tahoe area with a couple of artists that work with recycled materials. And what else? We're really excited about this forthcoming book that we are hopefully publishing in the beginning of this year. And we have some muralist out today in Fisherman's Wharf doing some work, and also an artist in Oakland who is doing work on a development process project as well. So there's a lot happening, but again, the beginning of the year tends to be time to be able to do a little bit of regroup and breather to get all of our more like admin type stuff out of the way so that we can hit the ground running when projects are coming in.
And then if people wanted to sign up for the book or purchase the book or find out more about your activities, they could go to, you have two different websites. Which do you want them to go to? Or do you want them to go to both, of course?
They can go to both, but the Building 180's website will have the Paint the Void information on it as well, which is www.building180.com. We are done with the pre-sales for now, and then once we publish, we'll be able to sell them, so that there'll be links. Well, there'll be links to do that eventually, but we're not quite there. But keep an eye out. There's our Instagram is also Paint the Void Project on Instagram, where we have a lot of updates for that. And yeah, we're excited to keep going. It's always different. Every year is different. Every day is different.
All right. So I want to thank Meredith for sharing, you know, your work today and your organizations to work to support our arts and cultural workforce. We'll make sure that our viewers and listeners have your contact information, websites, and social media so they can get engaged and support all of your work to support our arts and cultural organizations as we continue to work our way through the recovery from COVID-19. And Meredith, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our second guest is the Deputy Director of the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation, Fernando Pujals.
I'm joined remotely by the Deputy Director of the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation, Fernando Pujals. Welcome back to Voices of the Community, Fernando.
Thank you for having me. Really delighted to be here today and looking forward to talking.
And we really wanted to bring you back. First, I wanted to thank you so much for participating in our co-production of the State of the Arts Summit with Arts for a Better Bay Area at the Strand Theater back on June 28th in the Strand Theaters in Mid-Market, for all those folks who don't know. And, you know, really wanted you to come back to the show because we kind of ran out of time there for you to share with the audience all the work that the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation is doing to utilize, you know, arts for both economic and community development, which was the theme of the summit itself. So in the Market Street Arts Program, there's what, you know, we talked about. Actually, you talked about it during the summit, and I will ask listeners to go back to our episode number 3, which included Julie Baker talking about creative hubs as well with Californians for the Arts. So share a little bit about the idea. I mean, the kind of the structure, if you will, because, you know, it's more than just, oh, hey, here's another slideshow and another, you know, plan. And we know that, you know, cities and people love plans, but, you know, you've got creative hubs going. If people were to arrive at Mid-Market today, they would see, similar to downtown, a lot of vacant storefronts, but you have a plan for that. So yeah, Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and it's a part of a larger part, but it's a big and important part. And it was interesting, that synergy, hearing other people say creative hubs. I hadn't really heard others saying it, but it's this kind of thing that's percolating out there. But about 6 months ago, we put out a call for creative concepts in partnership with a consultancy, NowArt, out of Los Angeles, with a local footprint here in San Francisco as well. And we began to receive submissions. And just first, I have to say that I'm just taken aback and feel really lucky in this work that the creative community is here putting their hand in the air saying, we are San Francisco, we're down, and, you know, we've got things to say. And I think that's just really beautiful. And it's been an incredible energy talking with these organizations and folks and individuals who are really putting themselves forward. So out of that creative call for concepts, we developed an arts advisory committee with all local arts leaders and business folks from the neighborhood, and really combed through all these submissions. And what began to emerge was that there were thematic ties among different organizations and different proposals or concepts. And so what we've done is, in a curatorial way, group different organizations that tie thematically together and seek out to work with them, to stipend them to work and develop operating plans together for vacant spaces. And so these vacant spaces, you won't hear me use the word pop-up, because we really want to build this idea of sustainability into the process. And so we're getting into master lease agreements with property owners who are understanding of the program, the vision, and then working with the organizations to develop business plans and subsidize them pretty significantly for at least 1 year. And in that 1 year, begin to continue to develop if there is a sustainable model for the creative businesses that they're operating. And those themes, that some of the themes that have emerged, not all, we have like performance incubator space, which is a space that is not just to have events and programs that people can come to, but really to gestate work, to develop work and work in community, to get ready for a different, you know, setting. And that was something that we heard a lot in the curation, was artists still saying, I need space to develop my work, you know, away from my studio or away from my apartment or borrowing space from this or that or traveling far distances. Like, we still need space here. So that's one. We had a number of literary submissions, and the literary submissions span everything from an immersive retail bookstore experience to the zine culture and printing and those types of workshop and printing services. So we had a number of fashion and makers, really tactile folks that are doing stuff. So, you know, probably here before the holidays, get ready for the launch of our first hub, the Fashion Makers Hub. But in between this, you also have events, you have public programs, art installations. You know, between now and the end of the year, come to mid-market between 5th and 7th, and you're very likely to see, hear some music. We've paired with a number of businesses, and we have, I think, in the next 5 weeks, more than 20 musicians getting really well-paying gigs to provide some music, either lunchtime or the evening time or happy hour, you know, just beginning to change the experience of the sidewalk here and make people pause and say, oh, and experience a little bit of joy. So if you're in the line for the war field and there's 2,000 people standing there, there's some more things happening that say, hey, things are happening here. And it's really back to the roots of the neighborhood as an entrepreneurial and creative driving force in the heart and soul of San Francisco at the center of our city. So
Fernando, artists basically with a capital A, i.e. it's, you know, it's live arts, it's makers, it's traditional art. To your point, it's printmakers. So if I was an artist listening to the show, how would I get engaged in, you know, submitting a proposal either for this phase or the next phase, you know, to, cause it sounds like you're not only just saying, okay, we're going to help you start something, but we're going to actually help you secure some funding, which, as we both know, is always hard in arts land. Everyone loves the arts, as we were talking before we started, you know, but oh my God, do I need to fund that? So if I'm an artist, how do I get engaged?
Yeah. At this point, the best way for someone to get engaged is to email or go to our website, midmarketbusinessassociation.com, and hit the contact tab and just give us a sentence or two about what you're thinking and what you're doing. And I think that will warrant a conversation. And then from there, we would take it from there. There's not an open submission portal at the moment, but in a future phase, we would probably look to open that again. But right now, it's just a simple call or an email and through the website, and we are responsive and we'll get back to you and have a conversation and see where it goes. And, you know, a lot of this has come from, it starts with one thing we do together and then it leads, you know, to the next thing. And it's interesting. We, in this vision for Market Street, we've really looked at international districts throughout the world that have become sort of cultural havens. And one that really rises up to us is Quartier des Spectacles in Montreal, because it has a very similar footprint between the performance venues, independent, smaller cultural organizations or cultural venues, including bars and restaurants that have music, and then these open plazas. And we began a dialogue with them, and we were invited out to Montreal in October and got, you know, really a tour of all of the work and the history. It's a 20-year process. But one thing that we noticed quite a bit that was shockingly clear is the level of investment that comes from the state, the province, the city, to a degree that they really recognize the arts as critical to business, culture, identity. And I think that we could take a page out of Canada's book in the way that we certainly love our arts and we support our arts, but there's a whole different level of investment that also creates more risk-taking, more collaboration. And we are a great collaborative community, a creative community here, business community. But boy, bring on more resources. We could all use them, and the city would be better for it.
And staying with that, Fernando, the kind of lessons learned from your field trip, if you will, you've also been in the field and been doing this in, you know, an area that's, you know, sadly for decades, a containment zone, right? When you consider mid-market, Soma to some degree, of course, you know, the Tenderloin, you know, what are some of the things that you and your team have discovered that are working, not working? And then what would you like to see, you know, community support for, government support for, philanthropy, foundation / corporations to help?
I would love to see, you know, continued philanthropy, of course, and putting money directly in the hands of creative businesses and artists. They know how to spend it and it will return. And I think that we're at a space where diversifying the economy here would be a really good step, and finding other sectors beyond tech. And tech was great, I'm not going to at all disparage the Twitter tax break because it did drive a significant level in investment here. We have renovated hotels, renovated Class A office, but the world has changed. People aren't working from home the same way. We're boots on the ground because we're a neighborhood organization. Of course we're here. You know, we're really building for residents and visitors, and we think office will come when the neighborhood, you know, begins to show its potential again. But positivity is happening here. And what we saw through the pandemic was just the absence of positivity. And it made the things that were negative that were here much more visible. And again, the fentanyl in the drug market has really done a number on many of our cities, but we're really feeling it here. And it's something we've really got to grapple with. But if you were here this last weekend, there was an art walk. There was an amazing hip hop festival in UN Plaza with an incredible B-boy, B-girl breakdance battle. And it was a space that was welcoming to everyone. You know, folks that are down and out that are here that I recognize from my daily time, they were here and they were happy. And there was this moment of hope and joy that you could see on their faces. And I think we need to really lean into bringing more and more programming and positivity to the area. And for the businesses that are hanging on here, we should support them and subsidize them to get them through this year. And I think that would really go a long way in maintaining the positivity that's happening on the sidewalk. So would love to see, you know, the public sector has been supportive of this plan and our efforts. And we'd love to see more of the private sector foundations paying attention to mid-market. Now, we've entered a place in San Francisco where all the downtown core has vacancy woes and challenges. But I would position that the international reputation of our city is very much coming through the heart of our city, and that an investment in mid-market really floats up all the boats in the tide.
And to that point, how does the mid-market obviously has been, you know, you guys have been working on it. There's a whole program planned for the UN Plaza, which I'd love to have you share your thoughts on that. And then there's the downtown, you know, entertainment zone, right? The SF Arts and Culture Entertainment Zone, or, you know, as we love acronyms in city government, the ACE zone. So how does your work actually fit, you know, in transition back and forth between those plans?
I mean, I think you mentioned the plazas, and I love what we've seen in the plazas between the greenery, the new skate park that the skate community is responding really well to, and some of the programming that we just have barely begun to see. You know, in our Market Street Arts plan and vision, these plazas are really highly programmed, both with passive activity, meaning you go and you play chess and your people watch, just like in any other really desirable public space. But then, you know, down the line, we'd love to see some big concerts here. You know, we'd love to see, we're seeing a major art installation right now with lasers going up Market Street tonight. But, you know, we'd love to see more of that stuff. And then in terms of an arts and cultural zone, we have one right here in mid-market, and it has been one historically. But that is not to say we can't have more. San Francisco is a cultural, artistic city. One of the things that makes our city amazing is the different neighborhoods and the different vibes. And you can't tell me there's not culture and arts in the Mission, but that does not mean that we can't have a central theater, arts and entertainment district. They all support one another. And this can be a sort of beacon to bring in the neighborhoods into the central city. We have two regional transits that are some of the most ridden, you know, transit in the system. So this connects the entire Bay Area right here in the heart of the city. And so, you know, it should be a shining example of our art and culture, not to surpass any of the other areas. They all work together.
Right. So let's circle back to your point about here we are November 23, coming into the whole holiday season, et cetera. You know, theaters like, you know, I know ACT is going to bring back, you know, their Christmas Carol and, you know, shows with all the, because there's what, 5 or 6 major venues in the area?
And just from 6th to 9th, you have Another Planet Entertainment, Bill Graham Civic Auditorium. You have Ambassador Theater Group's, the Orpheum and Golden Gate Theaters. You have the ACT Strand, and then you have the Warfield Theater operated by Golden Voice, or booked by Golden Voice. So just from 6th to 9th, you're talking 16,800 seats and some of the biggest players in live performance right here in the heart of the city. You know, 2 metro stops. And then in between that, you know, you've got Go Get a Drink at Mr. Tipple's. Go check out, you know, some modern dance, really push you revolutionary work at Counterpulse. You know, go see an open studios at Root Division on Mission and 7th. You know, it's all right here. And then go get a pizza at Montesacro. You know, I think what we see is that folks are coming to these awesome theaters, getting a chance at some you know, major entertainment and then taken off. And I say linger. And we've got new places too. Jonathan Carver Moore Gallery, right next to the Warfield Theater, is bringing some really great work and really championing the neighborhood. So.
And then going into the new year in 2024, you've got going your, it's your year two, if you will, of your plan. So what should people look forward to and how can they get engaged?
That's like second half of year one. We'll be launching creative hubs, at least two more in the first two quarters. We'll have one already under our belt. You'll have a number of public programs. I mentioned music, but stay tuned for more. And I think that it would be great to bring, and we will, you know, some interactive kind of public art for people to engage with that will also have programming. And then the other piece of that is that we'll be looking to support some of our local creative businesses that are already here with some smaller grants to bring their ideas to fruition that they'd like to see enliven the area. So it's not just about bringing in new, it's about working with who's here, who's put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and they have great ideas and great projects that they want to bring forth. So that could look like restaurants doing stuff. It could look like some of our local businesses. So please stay tuned. And I highly encourage folks to go to the website and you'll get a pop-up for our newsletter. And that'll be a quick sign up. We'll also be launching social media channels for Market Street Arts, which will of course be a much more, you know, readily available way to engage and dialogue with us and find out about what's going on. So please stay tuned to that as well.
Great. Is there anything else I haven't asked you that you wanted to share before I get us off of the interview?
I'll probably think of something right when we hang up, but I'm just really grateful for the opportunity. Again, there's an amazing creative community here in the heart of the city that is ready and willing to put forth. And this is an amazing place. And we're just at the next phase of our history. And we can all rewrite it together right now. So come and join us. Market Street Arts is much bigger than an organization. It's really about a place, and it's about everything from the small venues I mentioned to the big theaters we talked about. It's everything in between.
Wonderful. I want to thank Fernando for sharing his organization's work to support our arts and culture workforce. We will make sure that our viewers and listeners have your contact information, your website, social media, so they can get engaged and support all your work. And we'll also make sure that folks have a link over to the really wonderful plan and study, because it's a detailed study. And there's actual little summary slides for folks who don't like to read a lot. But thank you again, Fernando, for being on Voices of the Community.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. We really appreciate what you're doing.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voices of Laura Pompati, the Deputy Director of the Center for Cultural Innovation, Richard Rea, the Chief Strategy Officer at Mission Economic Development Agency, Fernando Pujals, the Deputy Director of the Mid-Market Business Association Foundation, Meredith Winner, the co-founder and COO of Building 180 and Managing Director and co-founder of Paint the Void, and Jacob Bentliff, the Manager of Economic Recovery Initiatives at the City of San Francisco's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, along with our co-host, Susie McKinnon, a steward at Arts for a Better Bay Area. To find out more information about our guest and their respective organizations, programs, services, how to volunteer, and to make a donation, please go to voicesofthecommunity.com and click on the link to the Arts and Culture series and Episode 5. While you're on our website, you can both watch or listen to the full episodes and one-on-one interviews of our Arts and Culture series, along with signing up for our newsletter to stay up to date on future shows. After watching and listening to these wonderful stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to support our arts and culture organizations and our arts and culture workforce. Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with Arts for a Better Bay Area for their State of the Arts Summit, along with our amazing technical crew, the audio and video wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada, and our co-production partner, Bayvac Media, and their wonderful staff, Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Issa Nakazawa, Siobhan Giles, and Melanie Ayala. The graphics magic was made possible by Casey Nance from Citron Studios. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, whose arts and culture grants ensure vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and artists and audiences inclusive of the Bay Area's diverse communities and cultures have opportunities to thrive. To find out more, go to zff.org, and by a grant from the Peaceful World Foundation, dedicated to fostering a culture of global peace, the promotion of hosted conversations, and education. You can learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. We'd also like to thank Our broadcast partners, KSFP 102.5 FM, KPCA 103.3 FM, Petaluma Community TV, and BayVac Media.